This is the Bridge of the Faithful podcast, featuring your host, Jenna Erlandson.
Hey guys, and welcome to the Bridge of the Faithful podcast. I'm Jenna, and we're all on this faithful bridge together. These episodes are just my documentation of the things that God is showing me as I search to understand what faithfulness really means. You can find this and all other episodes at botfpodcast.com. You can also connect with me at facebook.com/botfpodcast or email info@botfpodcast.com. And we are continuing on with our creativity series. We're here with my amazing friend, Fiona. We met in a mom's group where I needed a baby monitor because mine suddenly died, and she graciously let me use hers. And then we continued our friendship through a kickboxing class at the Y together. and then she became the amazing person that came to my house at, what was it, like 2 in the morning?
2 in the morning, yeah.
When I was having a baby. And we've just, you know, you make your friends in funny ways, and God just brings them together. And she is an amazing painter. She does watercolor. She does stuff with architecture. I've seen it. She attempted once to help me learn how to do watercolor, and I am not artistic at all. But that was the best flower I've ever painted in my life. So, hey, so Fiona, why don't
I'd
you
like
tell
to say, five minutes after you called me, I woke up. I didn't even have my alarm on. That was the cool thing. Like, it was totally a God waking me up thing.
Awesome.
There's no way I would have woken up. But 5 minutes after you called me, I woke up at 2 a.m. in the morning.
And you just looked at your phone?
Yeah, I just looked at my phone. Huh. So,
well, thank you. Thank you for listening to the Holy Spirit. So why don't you tell us a little bit more detail about some of the stuff that you do and your passion when it comes to painting?
Yes. Thank you for having me on, Jenna. That's kind of you. Everything that I do is a little bit of a work in process, because I'm much better with art than I am with words. But I have tried to call myself an architectural artist and illustrator. I primarily use the medium of watercolor. I paint cityscapes, homes. I illustrate ideas and logos for small businesses. I sometimes do paintings for magazines. I have quite a whimsical style, I think, with loose line work and bright colors. And I paint primarily architectural subjects because that's my training. I feel very comfortable painting buildings, but also because I think it gives a great starting point for storytelling. In cities especially, you get so this sort of intersection of styles and just historical events and people's lives and these sort of textures and colors, and it begins to tell sort of something of who we are as people. So that's kind of the starting point from where I kind of create from.
So how did you learn about your talent? Like, did it start off where you just were amazing at painting, or did you decide you love painting and you had to work at it?
It was a little bit of both. I think I've definitely been wired to create right from the get-go. Like, there's always been that I see something and, oh, I'm going to draw it, or I'm going to create from it. Like, there's that immediate connection that's always been there. I can remember in my middle school, I guess that's sort of like almost, it's British version of junior high, kind of, mm-hmm. roughly. And I can remember seeing, like, trying to draw something and getting really frustrated because I just couldn't do it. Like, I couldn't quite get there from what was in my head. And then sort of as I went into high school, like, finally I went, oh, okay, I can gradually, like, I could finally begin to sort of get out what I saw in my head onto a piece of paper. But yeah, that was kind of my rebellious youth. Like, I just drew and drew and drew and drew. I've always loved to draw.
So your rebellion was drawing?
Yes. Yeah.
You must have been a hard kid to take
it. Yeah. I went to a school that didn't really favor academics. Oh. So I was smart, and that wasn't very popular. And so art was kind of my solace. Like, I went to the art room and I would draw a lot, and that was just my favorite place to be. So that was
was really good.
Did you have a mentor that helped you, or was it just an internal process?
I had a few very supportive art teachers. I think my art teacher in high school, Mr. Crawford, he was just always encouraging, and that really allowed me to be confident about it. And so I think he was the one who got me started on watercolor and just taught me the basics. And yeah, that's what started me in the medium of watercolor.
Cool.
I do like watercolor too, though. It fits my personality well, because, you know, in oils, you do just have to labor over and over and over again. Like, it's never finished. Whereas with a watercolor, like, you really only get kind of one shot, but it's much shorter process. So I enjoy that kind of, I lose patience with some of the different medium. So I do like watercolor a lot. But yeah, he started me on it. So I'm thankful to him for that.
So you have a physical medium versus like an author or a playwright or a musician. How does it feel to have it in your hand and to manipulate it that way versus in your head only until you write it down?
That's a good question. I think there's a lot of parallels. Like, I listen to a lot of different creatives talk, and there is quite a similar process. You know, like, you always start with that initial idea, and it's just sort of this electric, like, there's so many possibilities and potential and things that you could do with it. And actually, there's a guy called Austin Kleon who wrote a book called Steal Like an Artist, and he has this diagram in his book about, you know, that sort of the creative life or the life of a project. And it's this, it starts as a high and then it tapers down as you kind of work through difficulties, and he calls it the dark night of the soul. And I really like that, because I think in every project I've done, there's always been a point where I'm like, oh, I can't recover this. There's no way I completely give up. This is hopeless. And then you kind of plot back up to, okay, it's not as good as maybe as I'd hoped, but I'm still proud of it. And so I think maybe not everybody's like that, but from what I've experienced, I think there's a certain degree of just that process of creativity is quite similar.
So what is your creation process when you get a, like, do you prefer to just do something that inspires you, or do you prefer to have someone tell you, like, I want this specific thing?
I like both, actually. Like I say, I sort of split up my work into two categories of architectural fine art and illustration. And with the fine art, it's kind of a story I want to tell, like something that I've seen or I've experienced or I'm thinking about in my head. And I get to sort of try and compose it and choose the colors and work through the line work or just pick out how I see something. Whereas with illustration, I see it as much more as telling somebody else's story and what they see as valuable about something that they've done, or a particular thing about their business, or a particular thing about their story that is important to them that they want to try and show visually. And so in both of those, it's about observing and looking and listening and trying to understand what are the kind of most important parts of this, and then sketching or just kind of taking the right photographs, and then taking that information and then kind of playing with it until it works as a composition, and then setting up my paper and stretching out the paper and doing all the mechanics of getting it ready, and then drawing out this kind of view, and then it's pen on top of that, and then it's watercolor on top of that, and sort of, so it's these sort of stages of, and in all of that I'm still kind of thinking about that original idea, and does it work, does this kind of tell the story I want it to, like how can I best show this sort of sequence of details.
How long does that take?
It's often size related. So again, you know, sometimes my work tends to be quite detailed. And so if I'm doing a massive piece, like, it really just is long. It's a long, lots and lots of hours. On the smaller ones, it can be quite quick. If something is, like recently I did a logo for a flower truck in Columbus. She's called Rosie the Flower Truck, and she's just this cute truck. I don't remember what kind of truck it is, but that really actually didn't take very long because the lady that runs the business had this kind of very clear idea about what sort of image she wanted or the way it looked, and that I could see what it was she wanted. And so that was quite a, that took a lot less time than some of the big detailed cityscapes. So it, yeah, it really does vary quite considerably. So
you had talked earlier about like an electric jolt. Is that how you feel? Like, is it when you get inspiration, is it a physical, like you can feel it, or is it more of a, like a simmering?
Again, another question. It's not like a physical jolt, but I guess a flash of bright colors in my mind going, oh, that's really exciting. Just that sort of feeling of excitement. And it really motivates me to get started. When everything else seems dull, then that's what I, that's what I want to think about. I think I realized at some point that I had to sort of give up trying to give up doing it. You know, sometimes you think, oh, it's just a waste of time. Like, is it really worth my time spending doing this? And, but it just is what gets me started in the day. And I'm always just like, oh, maybe I could try it this way, or, oh, that would be a really fun project to do, or what if I did this? And I just, that's, it's just always on my mind. I can't stop it. So it's, yeah, it's just a big chunk of who I am, and it gives me a thrill. It just sort of wakes me up a little bit.
Like almost an adrenaline kind
yeah,
of?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, similar to sort of exercise.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like one of your kickboxing classes. Like, it's similar kind of feeling. Like, oh, yeah, let's do this. It's great.
Yes. So,
yeah.
So what are some barriers for you when you try to make stuff?
It's different according to the season of life. I used to procrastinate a lot more, especially right out of college. I finally had to teach myself how to just do things when now. Don't just put off the difficult parts, get the difficult parts over and done with. Because now, you know, I'm in the season of life just the same as you with small children. And so time and mental space, actually, that just, it's much harder to find just endless time and free space to think. That is difficult with small children. So that's kind of my main barrier at now. And I love, you know, I love being a mom, and that's one of my favorite things. And I don't want to like resent that season, because I know it comes and goes very quickly. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I do miss that sort of space that you get to just get into a project and run with it. Like, it's much more, I have to do it in chunks. I want more now.
So. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
So has being a Christian changed the way that you create? Well, I guess we should go back. How long have you been a Christian?
I think somewhere around 18. I grew up in a Christian home, and I went to church my whole life. And so I knew sort of who God was, and just knew about Jesus. And, you know, I was a good girl. I wasn't really a rebel, but
obviously with drawing being your rebellion.
But I think at university I went to the Christian Union there, and they had a series of gospel talks, and I think that was the first time that God really helped me understand just why Jesus had to die for my sin. Like, it never really connected with like how that connected with me personally, and just how important that was for salvation. And so I think that first year of college, like slowly figuring that out in my mind, was when I became a Christian. So
awesome. So did you notice any change in the way you painted after that?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah.
I think I was thinking about that because I read the question earlier, and I was trying to think what is different. And I think for some people, again, there is a very clear difference, you know, perhaps in subject, or just maybe the process changes when they become a new person, you know. But for me, the mechanics is kind of the same, like just the, again, you know, just the way the lines work. And I think I've gotten better as I've practiced more, but in terms of just the process, it's the same. I think what is different is the motivation for me. And the motivation being, you know, every time I paint, to sort of try and make it something for God's glory rather than purely my pleasure or my ego. And that's always, you know, a little bit of a challenge to do, because there's always that desire to please and have somebody like something. But I do want it to be something that I can worship with and glorify God with. And so that, I think that's the main difference for me.
How do you want your creation to represent God? Well, let's go to just the person who sees it somewhere, like not necessarily someone who commissioned the piece.
Yeah. I think in my pieces, especially with the more general cityscape pieces or architectural pieces, I think I'm trying, or I'm striving to sort of describe the dignity of humanity, in that we're all a creation of God and we're all loved by God. Like, that alone gives us dignity. People's stories have dignity. And especially after the season of COVID-19 and, you know, George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and just so many different kinds of hurt, it's become, I see it all the more, just the fragility of human life, but also that resilience to just kind of push on and to keep trying and to do better and love more, and even when it's just the difficulties that seem insurmountable. And I think these are not new qualities per se, but they're just part of what it means to be human. And so in painting, you know, somebody's butcher shop or your house or this, you know, this place that you loved for so many years, or, you know, the wedding day that you had, or kind of like a beautiful building that perhaps has a history of slavery, like, you know, just all these things, just when you mash them up together, like, they do just tell these stories that are worth recording and worth remembering and remind us of kind of the dignity of people. There's one example that I was thinking about that really just made me happy at the time. I had painted a Charleston streetscape, and it was just this gorgeous building, or this series of buildings, and, you know, classic Charleston pastel colors, and you got your bikes out front, and like the bikes were turquoise and the buildings were pink, and you had this kind of cool color contrast and this, and really unusual architecture, very specifically designed and organized, and just these interesting geometries. And the owner of one of the businesses saw it and decided to buy the painting, and it was special to him, not just because it was his, but because one of the buildings was one that his father had built, and he built the business from scratch, and it was this sort of history of the family over the years of this thing that his father had loved, and his father had just passed away. And so it was just this really big honor to be able to honor his father and that family's kind of legacy. So that was really special to me, that somebody saw that and connected with it and like saw their own story in it.
Is it hard to watch other people interpret your paintings?
I think my worry is always that they won't see anything in the paintings, that it will just be this sort of, oh, it's just a pretty picture. Like, because, you know, sometimes it, there, and that is important too. Like, I would be lying if I said I wasn't just striving for that too, like, just to beauty for its own sake, that's a good thing. But there is still some deeper meaning in there. And I do like it when people see that, but I don't know that it always gets seen. So,
So where do you feel the most self-conscious?
I guess it's a bit of irony in that I think having confidence in my own voice, having spent the first half of the interview saying everybody has a voice, I still struggle with the fear that my voice isn't worth listening to, and my ability isn't good enough. And so much of me gets poured into these paintings that it's just hard not to feel a little bit on trial when people look at them and judge you for them. And I know it's not, there isn't a straight correlation, but it sometimes feels that way. But again, I don't think that would ever deter me from quitting. There's always I'm always thinking about the next thing, even if it doesn't quite work or it's not perfect. There's always I've always got the next idea. So
you're more resilient than I am when it comes to that. If you're like already moving on, does anything make you want to quit? Or are you just so energized by the next project that you can just keep going?
I mean, I've had a lot of disappointments and things that just haven't sort of pushed onto the next thing the way I've wanted them to. You know, they may have been okay, but it's sort of felt like they've just gone out into a vacuum. Mm. That can be discouraging. But here again, I don't know. And maybe at some point I'll just have to say, okay, it was not worth it as a career, but I'll just keep doing it because I love it.
Yeah. You could be like those famous painters that nobody knew when they were alive, but later you're going to be like in museums and so.
Yeah, Van Gogh isn't like an example to sort of be too.
please don't.
yes, I understand it. So and being okay with just, here again, which is where it comes back to just doing something to worship and honor God with and keeping that as my focus, which here again isn't always as easy as I might just say it, but that's who it can be for, and it can still be enjoyed.
Is that what gives you the most courage to get yourself out there again?
Yeah, and also just I would regret not having tried, you know, to sort of get old and go like, oh, well, never mind. Okay, I can try. I don't know. I would still rather try and fail, even if it hurts.
Yes, I love that. So let's switch to identity. Is just a huge topic that I talk about a lot because I realize that that's one of my biggest battles in my life is like putting my identity somewhere safe. And for me, it's like it's a weird vacillation between not feeling like I'm enough and then having too much confidence. And then like it goes back and forth. Right. So do you have that issue? Like, do you have an issue with putting too much of your identity into your ability to paint? Here's the good question. If you lost the ability to paint, would you be like floundering? Or would you be able to move on to something different?
I think I would just find a different way to do it. I think it would crush me for a while. I think it would crush me because I do find such a big part of my identity in being an artist. But I think I would probably just figure out a different way to create. Like I say, it just is so innate in there. I think I was listening to this Rabbi Zacharias talk. I love Ravi Zacharias, and I'm just sort of saddened by his death recently. And so I was listening to the great weaver. I'm terrible with details sometimes. Anyway, he was talking about just the genius of human creativity, and being the reason that we're like that is because we reflect the character of God, and he gave us that capacity to create. It reflects him, and it's also something he has passed on for us to be able to do. And so it's just so cool. I think it's awesome that he made us in such a way that we could reflect him by creating. Like, in doing that, we can sort of be closer to him or be like him or be more human. And I think he just gave me a lot of it. Like, I might not be any good at it, but I do like it. It's just part of the way I work. And so I think I would just find a different way to express that. And that is the cool thing about creativity. I do love that. You know, some people are more creative musically or in the written language or in, you know, iPad Pro or watercolor or film directing or podcasting and interviewing people thoughtfully. And that's such a cool thing that we get to express even different aspects of our creator through those things. So
I think you just summarized in 2 minutes the whole point that I wanted to do in this entire series. So thank you. And I will now bow out. I do not need to do my job anymore. But yeah, that's exactly the point of this is that we are created in God's image. And that means that he gave us his attributes, some parts of it. Like not everybody gets all of it because we're not God. So we can't have all of his attributes, but he's like kind of like a child is like a father. He's given us like some of those. Oh, he has his eyes, or oh, he has God's ability to paint, or God's love for color and stuff like that. And that's why I wanted to look at all the different kinds of creativeness. That word came out weird, but creativeness and seeing that, like, that all does. I need to look this up with Ravi because I say that like I'm on a first name basis with Ravi Zacharias.
Like he also said, it when applied within the boundaries of his like kingship. So again, yeah. It's that worship aspect, yep. Because there's so many incredibly talented creative people who are not Christians, and it might be look very different, and it might look very similar, but it's where that heart is going, or the application of kind of God's character within that sort of framework.
Yeah, I love that. You chose Psalm 8:3-5. So what sticks out to you? What makes you really cling to this verse section?
I this verse, I think, is sort of a summary of some of the things I was saying earlier, just about the nature of man in relationship to God. And he gave us so much, like we're so special, so incredibly beautiful, and yet we're also just, you know, we have the height and the depth. Like we're kind of nothing, and yet we're everything all at the same time. And so I like that reminder as I paint, to sort of see the good and the bad in humanity and kind of express it with dignity. I think that's why I like that verse.
I love that. So before we go, first of all, thank you. You are like 3 hours behind me, and you were willing to take a break in the middle of dinner time to do this with me. So that really means a lot.
Thank my husband.
Yes. Thank you, Sam. Thanks, Sam. And then I will put links. There's links in the show notes to get to your page and to follow you on Facebook. And I just want to say thank you before we leave to Fiona for meeting with me. She's 3 hours behind, and her amazing husband Sam is cooking dinner well, so she could meet with me after my kids go to bed. And so that's like power dad right there, just doing everything, watching the kids, making dinner. So
he's pretty great.
Yeah. He is. So you can find her on Instagram or Facebook. We'll put her a website in the show notes. It's fionamiller.net. And yep. You can connect with her all those ways. If you have anything, any questions about it, or if there's anything you would love to have painted, she's pretty great. Obviously, I think so. And then part of the giveaway that we are doing is a print of one of the projects she did for a map of Columbus. So that's pretty cool. And so, yeah, just thank you for spending the time with us to talk about painting and how God uses you and you worship that way. That was really a really cool way to look at it.
Thank you very much for having me, Jenna. I appreciate it.
Psalm 8:3-5. When I look at your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have set in place, what is man that you are mindful of him, and the son of man that you care for him? Yet you have made him a little lower than the heavenly beings and crowned him with glory and honor.
This has been episode 31 of the Bridge of the Faithful podcast, entitled Created to Create with painter Fiona Miller. For show notes, go to botfpodcast.com/episode/31. You can find us on social media at Facebook or Instagram.